Beautiful Baby. Navigating Surrogacy and Donor IVF, a limited podcast series. Recorded and produced by Growing Families Sam Everingham and Kerry Duncan.
Welcome everybody to today's podcast. We're really excited. Sam and I are going to delve into ethical standards. It's a pretty juicy topic and a bit of a challenging topic, but I really wanted to talk to Sam about the things that he's doing in Growing Families. I just wanted to start with the vision for Growing Families. It actually includes making complex family building easier for all. And as part of that vision, it's about becoming an advocate for change to make the industry safer and easier for all. Sam, I know you've done quite a bit of work over a number of years now to make international surrogacy easier. And I understand you've got a document called Ethical Standards. So today's just about exploring that and about some ideas that you've got and some ambitions you've got in this space. So if you could tell us a bit about that, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, sure, Kerry. So as an organisation, Growing Families, around a year ago, reached out and formed a national advisory board made up of experts from a number of countries around the world who offer surrogacy programs. It consists of lawyers and doctors and surrogacy experts from places like the USA, from Canada, from Argentina, Israel, Slovakia, Mexico, Georgia, even Greece and Colombia and Ukraine. So we brought those people together because we really wanted to have a voice in the sector, given that these cross-border arrangements come with additional complexities and risks. And our aim with these standards is to try and protect the interests of vulnerable surrogates and vulnerable intending parents, and to do that by establishing guidelines, which are really essential to consider before you engage in this process. So the guidelines are sort of, some of them are aimed at intending parents in terms of what they should be thinking about, some are aimed at surrogates, and some are aimed at agencies in terms of what they should be doing. And part of this is awareness raising, to try and make people aware that, you know, there's some important issues you need to think about here before you go ahead. So as a starting point, if I just start by talking about what we've developed in terms of, if you like, seven key points for intending parents. And these are based on the fact that surrogates are a limited commodity globally. You know, they're an extraordinary type of woman who can carry a baby without getting emotionally involved. So we really want intending parents to be able to demonstrate a genuine need for surrogacy related to a medical issue, psychological issue, or fertility issues. And that can, of course, be, you know, the absence of the uterus in the case of gay guys. But, I mean, just wanting to engage in surrogacy because, you know, you're too busy to have a kid, in our view, sort of wasn't sort of, a, you know, part of ethical standards. Undergoing appropriate psychological counselling ahead of time is really important because this is a process which requires a lot of sort of psychological engagement, if you like, with your surrogate, with your agency, or trust involved. And unless you sort of you're ready to put that trust in other people, then that's going to be hard. Given the current landscape we've got around the world in terms of changes and disruption in the landscape, a third standard is avoiding engaging in politically unstable jurisdictions or conflict-affected jurisdictions. And Ukraine, obviously, is one that comes to mind right now in that sense. Obviously, Israel is too. Fourth one, seeking professional advice to understand the legal situation and the surrogacy regulations before you proceed. There are unethical providers who will say to you, oh, look, you know, you can do surrogacy here, it's no problem, you know, it's all protected, when in fact it's not. And so seeking out an expert in the space who can give you reliable advice about what your legal standing is, what your surrogate standing is, what your child's standing is going to be after the birth are really important.
Sam, just quickly on that one, should they get, I know Growing Families can help, but should they also get a lawyer in the country they're from and the destination country? Is that ideal?
Certainly in the destination country. They should be getting one in their destination country because that's the country they're looking at in terms of where the surrogacy will be happening. So that's where they need to really be looking for getting legal advice there. Fifth one, ensuring they're eligible under the destination surrogacy laws. And that's related to the point you're just making. And there's a secure pathway for the child to be granted citizenship and a travel document. Now, some of these pathways, they're not legal ones where a court's involved. They're administrative pathways. And you need to make sure that you have got a pathway to bring your baby home. And that's where Growing Families comes in, because we don't need to give you legal advice for administrative stuff. We can show you these are the steps to take in some jurisdictions there. The sixth one, ensuring you've got agreements and advice in writing so you understand your rights, the risks, and your responsibilities. It's very important that you know what you're signing up for, what you do need to do in terms of, you know, commitment to the process and commitment to look after that baby that's coming, because you're so not going to care for the baby if you break up as a couple. You need to really make sure you've got next of kin in place in a worst case scenario, and make sure you've thought about all kinds of, you know, issues that might happen during a pregnancy. What are your attitudes to, you know, to termination, to bed rest, and all kinds of issues. And the seventh one, which is really important, is paying the agreed compensation directly to your surrogate where possible. We see too many instances where surrogates are paid through a third party. They don't get all the money they're supposed to get. So being able to pay them directly is really important, so you know where that money is going. And I know a number of the good providers do mandate that. There's also standards for surrogates that are important. And there's about seven of these that our consultation sort of uncovered as being really important to protect surrogates and the parents themselves. The first one of those is being a citizen or a permanent resident of the country where the birth is going to occur. And that's because there's lots of arrangements now where surrogates are being brought in as foreigners from other countries to work in a country where they're not a citizen. And that's happening at the moment in places like Georgia, in North Cyprus, and a few other countries like Albania, where the surrogates haven't got really good rights in that jurisdiction. Second one, have delivered at least one child and be raising or have raised that child. We want surrogates not to be, you know, have a risk of attaching to the child they're carrying. So having finished their own family is an important point. Financial stability is important, you know, and being at least 21 years old, we think is, you know, is a key criteria there. These processes do require some emotional maturity. And I mean, you're really not going to get any of that until you're at least 21 years old. Medical evaluation, health screening is really important. A surrogate being able to understand and agree to all aspects of the agreement. And this is trying to protect surrogates from exploitation. So understanding how the birth registration will work, making sure they've got independent legal advice paid for by the intending parents, just to make sure they're fully informed before they engage. The sixth one is bodily autonomy. So making sure that the surrogates, you know, doesn't have any requirement for a mandatory C-section or a mandatory termination, unless, you know, a licensed physician is saying for a medical reason, you know, it's essential. But making the surrogate understand that she has got control over what she does with her pregnancy is really important to make sure she feels empowered there.
I think that's a great word, Sam, that free will, empowerment, and she's doing it for the right reasons. I think that's where that screening is so important.
Oh, it is. Yeah. I mean, this is whether, you know, you're doing this independently or with an agency. It applies in both situations. Yeah. And the seventh one, being able to live at home with their kids during the pregnancy, it's really important. Mm-hmm. We see too many instances in the past where surrogates been brought into a central city, if you like, to be close to a hospital, but they don't think about, well, where are their kids going to live? How long are they going to be separated from their own family for? There are the final set of standards which we came up with for surrogacy and donor agencies. And these are a bit lengthier. There's about 14 of these, because these are sort of the guys who are managing the process sort of day in, day out for, you know, a good year, year and a half for someone's journey. And because they're pulling the strings, so to speak, you need to really make sure that they tick the boxes when it comes to some of these things. So the first of those you need to think about is, are they clearly outlining the services they're providing, the estimated costs, the billing and the refund policies? You need to know that as an IP. Are they making sure that all participants have the right for independent legal advice? Are they disclosing facilitation policies regarding future contact with your surrogate? So in some environments, agencies don't allow or facilitate ongoing contact with surrogates, and others they do. And it's really important for you as an IP to understand what that's going to look like and whether you are able, if you want to have that kind of ongoing contact. Because some people it's important to. And for some kids, you know, it might be important. To facilitate any mutually desired contact between the IPs and the surrogate before and during the pregnancy. Sometimes it's language barriers, and so that facilitation is really important if it's agreed upon. Conducting thorough screening of intending parents, criminal background checks, mental health evaluations, providing support and guidance to the intending parents on insurance, on necessary arrangements during the journey. Transparency in surrogate care and surrogate reimbursement. So it's very clear how much your surrogate's getting compensated and what cost he's going to be compensated for as well in terms of medical appointments and travel and all those sorts of things. Making sure they determine the match preferences. What kind of a person does a surrogate want to work with? What kind of person does the intending parent want to work with? To make sure they are on the same page there. Making sure they're disclosing information about the background and the screening status of surrogates and donors. Sometimes agencies sort of gloss over some of the stuff that's on the surrogate's paperwork and don't disclose that. And that's not on in terms of are transparency, because you need to make sure. An example of that, I suppose, is if a surrogate is living on her own and doesn't have supports around her, and the agency doesn't let you know about that up front. That's a really important sort of one we're talking about. Ensuring the surrogacy occurs in a location with access to quality medical care. Now, in some countries like the USA, well, so it could live in any sort of town or city in the country. We need to make sure that she is going to be not too far away from a good hospital in case, you know, the baby comes early, for example. Ensure there's full consent from the surrogate without coercion and infringement on her rights, making sure she's got comfortable housing and safe housing, allowing them to live with their family, as we pointed out before. Second last one is only dealing with ethical and transparent IVF clinics, which with an excellent standard of care. And there's a duty there to report any unethical or illegal activity to growing families and the relevant authorities there. So we want to make sure that if there are concerns coming up, that we hear about them. And so the providers who signed up to these standards are obliged to sort of to keep us informed about this kind of stuff. And the final one is ensuring agency owners are aware of the relevant laws and the regulations in their own jurisdiction and comply with those laws at all times. This is a complicated area because there are different laws in different countries. And so a law in one country might be very different to one in another country. So that's why being aware of those laws is really key. Does that sort of make sense?
It does. So the idea is that these have been put together
By the advisory board, that's right. As a sort of a minimum group of standards which agencies globally should adhere to. And what we've done with our Blue Ribbon program in Growing Families is said, look, if you want to be a preferred provider here with us, you need to make sure you sign up to these standards on a voluntary basis. And as you know, we're looking at, you know, a future process of auditing. In the future, if we can work out how we can do that cost effectively, to audit providers who are doing that. When it comes to IVF clinics, they're already bound by their own, in each country, they have their own regulatory bodies where they need to report to on an annual basis to say, you know, what they were doing and what their success rates for. And so for the IVF clinics, that they already have those sort of ISO type standards, which are portable, not always publicly reportable. In some countries like the UK and USA, they are publicly reportable. But in other countries, they're not.
So, Sam, what's been the success rate so far? Are you finding that most providers are willing to sign up to this agreement?
Yeah, look, they are. I mean, the ones we already know, a lot of providers who are ethical and who understand these issues. And so we've tended to single out the ones who we know are going to be okay with this model. And we haven't gone out to a huge number of them at this stage. But we've certainly had no barriers to the ones we've gone to so far in terms of saying, yes, this is the kind of program we think is really worthwhile.
Yeah, great. And given what's happened in Greece, and I'm sure a lot of people are quite concerned because things were happening allegedly very illegally, and how would you know? So how do you deal with something like that? Because someone could sign an agreement and there's nothing behind it, really.
Yeah, yeah. And look, it's a good example because in Greece, for example, what the IVF clinic was doing was saying, well, look, you know, you've got to pay your surrogate directly, but put it on a prepaid card and we'll give the card to the surrogate. And in fact, they weren't giving the card to the surrogate and they weren't putting the parents in touch with their surrogate. So it's really important that you are in touch with your surrogate from day one, whichever program you engage with, are able to have direct contact with your surrogate to avoid some of these scandals we've seen in the sector in recent years. It's important, I think, that you engage with companies where there is a decent sized company with proper standards in place in terms of financial accounting. I mean, in the Greek case, it seems there was one, you know, boss and controller, he called all the shots. There was no board oversight of the arrangements. And as one of the key reasons we've dropped these standards is there is no accountable body, whether it's in the USA or anywhere, in terms of standards. There, in the USA, there is SEEDS, and SEEDS is a Society for Ethics and Indignation and Surrogacy, and they do have a voluntary system of standards which they ask their providers to sign up to. But in the rest of the world, there's nothing. And so there's a big gap here. Mm. So being able to sort of, you know, give people some peace of mind that, you know, the provider they're working with is doing the right thing is increasingly important, as that Greek scandal showed us.
I think that's part of the reason that it is, you know, it's important to get some support through this process, and not that it could never happen again, because it could if someone was really deceitful and setting out to do the wrong thing. Yeah. But I suppose the good thing about someone like Growing Families and other organisations that do this work is that you're getting feedback from your clients regularly. And so you sort of hopefully mitigate those risks by knowing who's good to deal with and who's treating their surrogate and IP really well. And yeah, it's that feedback, isn't it?
That's important. True. And look, the concierge program we've been banning in the last year or so has really helped with that too, because we're sitting in on calls between the clients and their agencies. We're getting to know how they work. Mm-hmm. We're seeing where the barriers are, where people tend to fall over. And that's really helping us to sort of weed out the ones who are doing a good job and the ones who aren't.
Yeah, great. And Sam, what does a perfect world look like? Or something that's realistic that we could achieve in this space?
A perfect world, I think, would be immigrants being able to engage in surrogacy in their own country in a legally protected and safe manner. I mean, unfortunately, I think we're never going to get that globally, because different countries have very different attitudes to surrogacy. So we're going to see a continued, you know, use of cross-border arrangements. But that would be the ideal, be able to not have to cross borders to do this.
Mm. And second best, I know you mentioned before,
second best, I think, is having a global body that can be a sort of a regulatory body for this. So we do see agencies having to adhere to standards to be able to operate. I think that's sort of where there is an auditing process in place and agencies are accountable for all they do with tenant appearance. I think that would be the second best option there. That's, you know, also a big ask, given we're talking about providers across the globe in multiple languages too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, such different countries to navigate, really, in terms of, you know, health systems and legislation, regulations, as you said before. It's just a bit of a minefield. I applaud this agreement. I think it's a great step. It's certainly not foolproof, but it's getting people to reflect on what's important and agree to those standards, isn't it?
It's a start, that's right.
Yeah. What about just taking it a bit more local in Australia? I know there's probably people overseas listening, but in Australia, I know there was a paper prepared years ago, and I don't know that much more has happened since then, but, you know, the government acknowledges that people are forced to go overseas to get a surrogate. What do you think, if anything, the Australian government could or should do in this space?
Look, I think, and I had a meeting with one of the health ministers today about this very issue, and I think part of it is allowing children who are born by overseas surrogates, because we have a shortage in this country, to be recognised legally as a legal child of the parents, the Australian parents. And those kind of issues need to be fixed up in our state laws. And I know we've got governments now listening to that and, you know, are aware that this is a problem for those people. And we have an issue where children aren't treated equally in this space, because some of them have a legal parent and others don't in their own country. And that's difficult. So we're working on that. And I must confess, Australia is well behind the rest of the world in that area when it comes to recognising parentage for kids born overseas. Mm. It's a big issue. You know, there's laws that are well out of date there and were put in place in knee-jerk reactions. Gradually, countries are updating their laws and making them more friendly and being more aware that surrogacy is going to continue as a family-building pathway, and they need to sort of make sure the laws protect their surrogates and the kids.
I personally would love to see, I know when I was trying to navigate through this space, I just couldn't believe how much difference it was between the states and territories. So, you know, you see some great work being done in one state. It's like, well, what about the other states? So it would be fabulous if it could be sort of a federal overview and one treatment for the whole of the country rather than being so seemingly piecemeal, I think.
That's right. We are trying to get an agreement like that in place where there's an overarching law for the whole country, but it's difficult to do that. But the second best is just getting a great template in one state, which is adopted, and get that template adopted by the other states where they see it's working well.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to finish off, Sam, what do you think about the future? Any idea about timelines, or what do you think, sir? What's on your mind?
Look, I mean, we are seeing a lot of instability in the surrogacy landscape globally. We're seeing some prices going up in this space. I think there is, though, increasing acceptance amongst different cultures that the surrogacy is a thing. It's not just there for sort of for wealthy people. It is something that, you know, increasingly women, even potential surrogates, are more aware of. They can do an amazing thing to help another couple. So we are getting more awareness of that, particularly in westernised countries like Australia and the UK and Ireland, where women are putting their hands up to be surrogates. Mm-hmm. What I'd like to see, though, is a model here where there's more sort of potential for agencies to support surrogates locally. We don't have that enough here in Australia, and many countries don't have it. Mm-hmm. And that's a real gap, if you like, in terms of making it work well, because it tends to fall over if you don't have good support.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think every IP, everyone wants to have a safe space. I want to mitigate the risk. I want to do this in an ethical way that's where the surrogate's looked after and their needs looked after, and they're working with really professional providers. So any last minute thoughts, what would you recommend, Sam, for anyone navigating this space?
Oh, look, being in touch with other intending parents who are on a similar journey to you is, I think, is really important. You know, doing a professional consultation with someone in our team, getting good advice on this kind of stuff and getting good support is really important, because you can feel very alone in this space, and you can feel like you're not the only one or no one understands. You know, one of the benefits of the network we've developed globally is we do have parents, you know, in different countries around the world who've done this journey and can help you with peer advice, peer support, as well as professional support we can provide you. Unfortunately, you know, the rules are changing constantly. So, you know, someone who might have done something 5 years ago, it's probably out of date today, but it's our job to be across that as well. So I suppose the important thing is to reach out for support if you need it.
Yeah, great. Well, well done, I've got to say. I mean, I declare I work for Growing Families now, but I've got to say well done on creating this advisory board, Sam, and this ethical standards. It is a fabulous first start, and hopefully more great change happens because of it. So well done.
Yeah, thanks, Kelly. That's great.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information, please head to the Growing Families website, www.growingfamilies.org.